Did you know there's an online cannabis company that ships federally legal THC right to your door? And they found a way to combine THC with carefully selected functional ingredients to create gummies, baked goods, and flower for whatever type of buzz you'd want. I'm talking about Mood.com. They have an incredible line of cannabis gummies, and you get 20% off your first order at Mood.com with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. This isn't some rinky-dink discount of 5 or 10%. This is 20% off your first order. Forget one-size-fits-all supplements that only get you high. Mood's functional gummies are optimized to kick in as little as 15 minutes and take you to the mood you're looking for. My favorite are the Sleepy Time Advanced gummies. That's right, those are for sleepy time. You know when you just can't fall asleep? Take these and they'll put you right in the mood. Beyond gummies, Mood also has a selection of flower, pre-rolls, bakery treats, and beverages. Listen, you can find gummies to just get you high pretty much everywhere these days. But Mood's functional gummies combine premium, federally legal THC with targeted botanicals to help you get into the perfect mood, usually in as little as 15 minutes. And everything ships discreetly right to your door. No dispensary lines, no awkward conversations, just better days and nights delivered to your doorstep. Best of all, not only is every Mood product backed by a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, but as I mentioned, listeners get 20% off their first order with promo code SPECIALISTS with an S on the end. So head to Mood.com, find the functional gummy that matches exactly what you're looking for, and let Mood help you discover your perfect mood. And don't forget to use promo code SPECIALISTS when you check out to save 20% on your first order. Try it today at mood.com.
The Survivor Specialist, Phil and Will, are back. And today we are ranking our top 25 new era Survivor players. This actually came from a patron. We do our Survivor Rock Draw every other Wednesday. And so we always take two questions or two topics and we talk about each of them for 15 minutes. And we always said, if you give us a longer topic, we'll make a full episode out of it. But this one, we said, you know what? Why don't we just make this a full YouTube episode instead of just a patron only episode? But this came from DC Breezy. That was our patron who submitted this idea. And we've always kind of strayed away from doing these kinds of rankings because I do feel like the more we get into the community, it's one thing to rate a season because that can feel impersonal. But then when you start ranking players, how do you keep like the personal preference and stuff out of it? But you know what? If the patrons ask for it, here we are. This is what we're doing. So you see our Patreon link right down there at the bottom. If you're watching this video, patreon.com/specialist. I'm going through Australian Survivor right now. I'm doing Rock Draw. We're doing Every Season Matters. We're doing All Stars, which is something else right now. So consider becoming a patron. And here we are. We're about to rank the top 25 new era Survivor players. And I'm pretty excited because I know the list. Will doesn't know the list. I made my list ahead of time and did not adjust anything when Will sent it to me. But our criteria is clearly a little bit different. Towards the top, it seems like it's the same. But as we move away, the criteria is different. So it'll be fun to kind of break down what our criteria is and why we came up with this ranking in the first place. We do have each of our own individual rankings, but we're going to be going through the ranking of our combined lists. That's what's going to be our top 25. So Will, what's going on?
Yeah, I'm curious. You have more information than I do currently on this because you've seen both of our lists. But this was a great question for a topic. And the Rock Draw, if you aren't a patron, that's one of my favorite ones that we do. They're like long form, like Phil said, it's like 15 minutes to each topic. We've had some really good questions. This one felt like we couldn't do it in 15, couldn't do it in 30. To talk about 25 players and probably more too, because I'm sure we didn't rank the exact same 25 players, and we'll have a couple honorable mentions. This is going to be a full podcast. I'm excited. What was your criteria, Phil? First of all, I have mine. I was trying to be as objective as possible without being completely results oriented.
Yeah. So for me, towards the top of my ranking, it was results oriented. That doesn't mean that I only have winners at the top, but it was results oriented. It was like, did you come out with a plan and execute it? And then I started to kind of get into people that I thought were very important to the show. And I know that that's such a weird loose, what does that mean? But for instance, somebody like Carolyn, who sits there as a zero vote finalist And you can't, I'm a big believer that if you're a zero vote finalist, you can't really argue that you're one of the top players from a season, even, because you didn't get the votes when you got to the end. So like Russell in Heroes versus Villains can't be one of the top, he's not actually one of the top three players from Heroes versus Villains. You know what I mean? Like, but it's hard. Like, where do you put a zero vote finalist? But somebody like Carolyn, I really do look at her as the new era Rudy. And obviously Rudy was, you know, much more crass and stuff like that. But that's the type of reaction we've gotten from the community towards Carolyn. And so back in 2020, we were doing our top 100 players. And I was going very much based on like strategic gameplay, how far they made it, things like that. I remember I had Maddie Whitmore like super high, like top 30. And people were like, you're an idiot. And I'm like, but that guy gets the final three. He wins the game. And but I also would include people like Rudy. And people like James and people like Penner, who were so massive to the game and, yeah, had good moments and maybe had a good result here or there, but were much more of personalities than they necessarily were game players. And so I started to include some players like that. And then it kind of came down to, too, like, was the person taking risks? Were they taking chances? Were they kind of changing the game in a way? And, you know, a lot of these players in the new era, it all falls apart for them at some point. But how were they doing before it all fell apart for them? So I do think I'm going to have some controversial ones in here.
Sure.
But that's okay. And I'm sure I left out some people that are surprising to some. For everybody who's wondering, and I'll mention all 31 names who got votes. There were 31 names who got votes. So we'll have six honorable mentions that we do ahead of time. And, you know, I think with the new era, it's kind of hard to rank it perfectly because there are so many random twists. There are so many random tribe splits and double tribals and idols and advantages and whatever, that it's hard to sit here and say, oh, well, that person could have played this so much more perfectly. Whereas I feel like for the first 38 seasons, even when your back was totally against the wall, you always had a way to rebound. Whereas, and I don't have Caleb on my list, but Caleb, I always use the example from the new era of that man played a shot in the dark successfully. And the next day before noon, he was already separated from half the tribe and had no chance to actually do anything about bettering his position. So the new era is a little bit harder. So my ranking is a little bit more random. That's for sure.
Yeah, it's a difficult task for sure. For me, I used one criteria only. Is this player able to win the game? And how likely are they to win the game on any given season of all newbie players? This isn't about them going to play again. Now, like Carolyn, I think on a second go would actually have a chance. I don't think she, because now everyone's seen her and they're like, wait, she actually had like some strategic chops and was playing hard. Her personality that we all enjoy to watch, I don't think it conveys to a jury that I'm a serious player competing to win $1 million and that's going to get votes. And we saw her get no votes. So I unfortunately had to leave Carolyn off because I think she goes to play an all newbie season. Her chances of winning is almost zero. And it sucks to say, but that's just the case. And so that's how I rank the players. Put them on any random new era season. What is the win rate? What is the percentage of times they're going to get the win? Now, even if you win like 10% of the time, that's really good. There's a lot of players who play Survivor who have zero shot of winning. They're drawing dead from the start, as Jeff mentioned in the premiere of season 47, where they can do everything right. And they can make it to the final three. And there's something about this group of people, about this makeup or about their personality, that they will not be awarded jury votes in the end. So that is completely how I did it. And yes, it is very subjective in terms of like, it's my opinion on like how well I think these players stack up against each other. But objective in that, like, that is the only criteria that I'm using. How likely are you to win on any given season?
And your ranking makes a lot more sense to me now. So I will say, if that's good, what you're basing it on,
that's
your
what,
ranking
that's,
makes a lot more
if
sense.
If we're ranking players, we're not ranking characters. We're not ranking who's the best confessionalist or who's making the best TV or who's the best in challenges or who's the best strategic player. It is who's most likely to win $1 million. That's the goal of the game. That's what good players should be trying to do. And you mentioned taking risks. That comes with a winning game. Like, you have to actually influence the game and take risks. So you might have, you know, gone out like pre-merge maybe, but you still have a more likely chance to win than someone who got zero votes at the end, who got, you know, third place. Mm-hmm. So that's how I went about this.
Yeah. And that's great. I think when I was looking at it too, I feel like nowadays though, like, what it's hard to be like, okay, what makes the better Survivor player? You, like you said, the goal is to win $1 million. But I also think that there is something for like the culture of Survivor to be said when you're ranking these players and when you're putting them in there. And I think just like somebody like Carolyn, somebody like Q, who is an honorable mention here, he makes the cut as an honorable mention. I think somebody like Q is such a massive personality. We don't know if he actually would have been able to win the game at the end. Like, there are people out there, like from his cast even, who are like, you know, he was playing a strategic game. He was just such a mess that it would have been hard for him to get the votes, but he very well could have. That's a guy who like has it going on mentally, but also was so integral to this season and why this season was great. So I did put a little bit of emphasis into that. That doesn't
Q is a standout character, don't get me wrong, and I enjoyed watching him. I think Q's chances of winning an all newbie Survivor season are extremely low on any given chance. I just don't. And I think, hey, maybe he could get a couple votes, but the amount of times he talked about quitting or going home and just that talk and that kind of aura surrounding him, I think that would have rubbed enough jury members the wrong way where it really prevents him from winning. And I don't think that's unique to season 47. I think that's probably a mentality that he has, where when the going gets a little bit tough or he wants to take the moral high ground, I messed up, I ruined somebody's game, I should take the fall for it. You know, whatever the reason may be, we saw a willingness to, you know, throw in the towel at times. And that definitely, you know, for juries, current juries, modern Survivor juries, they really uphold and respect the game. And I think a lot of people were upset with Q's disrespect towards like the fabric of what makes Survivor Survivor. So I did not have him in my top 25. Not that he's not a top 25 character, but I just don't think his winning chances are all that high.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Sorry. Season 46.
Look at you getting ripped. I always like when you get ripped a little bit, you know, knocking
on
a peg.
I got 47 on the brain. We're getting close.
We're getting close. Hey, we're only a month away. This is great. August, right around the corner for everybody here. But So I've been very vocal as well that I think pretty much any third place finisher in the new era could win another season. You mentioned Carolyn could come back and probably win a second chance season, but not like an all newbie season.
Right.
But I truly believe, like, after having met Owen, met Ben, met Romeo, met Xander, who's the one I miss? Jake. These are people who all have the personality to win Survivor. Something just went wrong for them on their season. With that being said, because I actually do feel like that's probably the grouping I'm closest with, I only included Carolyn in this grouping because I don't feel like I could have been 100% objective with those zero vote finalists. Because for me, I sit there and I'm like, you put Owen on season 48, he could win season 48, and everybody go, how the hell do you go from a zero vote finalist to a winner? Well, the game fell into his hands this time rather than him having to play catch up. So I didn't put any of those players because I just feel like with a zero vote finalist, unless you're like Russell, who gets zero votes the second time he gets to a final tribal, it's like you're most of the time as a zero vote finalist, that game wasn't for you. So there's too many question marks to be like, you know what? You're a top 10 or top 15 player. And I didn't want to be sitting here putting Owen at like 15 and everybody going, what the hell, dude? He got zero votes. But that being said,
I have Owen and Jay.
You do.
Because I think a zero vote finalist, it's one of two ways. One is like, you got zero votes because you're not ever going to be able to convince a jury to give you $1 million. And we see that happen. And it's like, okay, I'm not going to include you. Other zero vote finalists are ones that were just didn't have any power and just, the game was not theirs to be had. And if they had different circumstances, they would be able to convince people to award them the win. So Owen and Jake, I do feel like if they are in other seasons, the amount of moves and plans that Jake had that was ruined by other players that were actually playing suboptimally, that they were, Katura was feeding into, you know, the Reba 4 and D and Austin and everything they had going on, where it's like, man, Jake had all these brilliant plans. Just because they didn't come to fruition doesn't mean that he's a bad player. And I think with a different group of people, Jake is a very likable. He's very emotional. I think he won a lot of hearts out there. Maybe not as many as Banu. But I think Jake's someone, if he's in the right position in the game, can absolutely be a Survivor winner.
So let's do these honorable mentions real quick. So these are the six people. There you go. Thank you. There you go, Jake.
Thank you, Jake. That's great.
Jake, I'll put you at top 25. You send me the same, send me the same note. You know, not that I'm,
how could you leave Jake off? What's wrong with you?
I know. Somebody else tell me I'm hot. That's all I need. So here's the six honorable mentions. So these are people who got votes, but didn't ultimately make it in. Only one of them did we both have on our list, which I think is interesting.
Interesting.
There's quite a few people we had on our lists where just one of us had them, but because we had them ranked so high, they were able to make it into the top 25.
Wow. Okay.
There is one player of these six who we both had, and I'm curious if you'll be able to figure it. Well, you'll
let's
be able
see.
To
Let me see if
out.
I can guess. Is it James Jones?
It is James Jones. It is James Jones.
The only way I guess did that this... is because I looked at my rankings and I had Owen and Jake both in my list. You said you didn't, so I knew it couldn't be that. Couldn't be either of those two people. So then James Jones was at my 23 spot.
Uh-huh. And so, yeah, John says this list is an aggregate of your two lists. So what we did is we each ranked 1 to 25. 25 points to first place, 24 points to second place, 23 points to third place, all the way down. And then if you're not on the list, it's zero. So whoever had the most points at the end, like if we both had the same person number one, they would have 50 points. That's the most points you could get. And then if I had somebody on my list, let's say, for instance, here with Jake, Will had Jake at number 23. So Jake got 3 points for that. I didn't have Jake.
Oh, yeah.
So that's zero. So it's 3 points total, which isn't enough to ultimately make it. But so here's the six names. It was Owen, Jake, Q, James Jones, Drew, and Deshaun. So Drew and Deshaun were two who you and I actually had. We both had Drew and Deshaun at 21.
But I had Drew at 21 and you had Deshaun.
Yes.
At 21. Yeah, and I just felt I considered the other one. Yeah, I considered Deshaun. It was just that I think he on an all like his first time playing, he made a lot of mistakes that prevented him from getting jury votes. And I feel like those mistakes would happen on any new season he would be on. Now, if Deshaun were to come back and play again, I think he's like a big threat to win. I think he's a really strong player, but we saw him go out and play and just get one vote. And that the jury wasn't too thrilled, even though he played like a pretty solid game. So I just think on a, like he just had some really poor jury management is all I can really say. On that.
I also feel
Drew,
like
we never saw go to the end. We never saw, I think Drew on any given season, if he makes final three, he's going to have a very compelling case to win, especially because he is a nerdy archetype and those players can often tell a pretty good story and put together a strategic narrative and be like, I was a threat, all this. So yeah.
And now he's a Jeopardy champion, so he doesn't
know. There you go.
But my thing with Deshaun was I felt like that was a weird jury because like the race of it all got involved and it was right after COVID. And there was this feeling of like he betrayed based on something that I don't think Deshaun was really considering. And I feel like that got so mixed into it that I felt Deshaun needed to be mentioned here. And I just feel like in another circumstance, even if he played with the exact same people, I feel like he had a chance.
Yeah. I don't know. I remember there was, what was it in season 41? He did some big move at Tribal and it just didn't. It was a complete blunder. Like it just didn't work. Something, it was almost like a blackmailing something of some sort. I forget. I kind of forget 41.
I haven't watched season 41 since it happened. It's funny that I have a 41 player that you don't. But yeah, Deshaun tried to, there was, oh my God, what the hell was the move? I know what you're talking about, but like it totally, and it like really was what ended up hurting him towards the end of the game. He just had like no way of getting back into the fold. But anyway, so those are our six people who ultimately didn't make it. And like we said, James Jones was the only one that we both had on the list that did not make the cut. And now we get into the top 25. So
let's
here we
do
go.
It.
We started off number 25, somebody who is not on Will's list. Came in at my list at number 20, one spot in front of Deshaun. And after your explanation, I'm kind of surprised you don't have this person. And that's Cody from season 43. Why did you not include Cody?
I considered Cody big time. He's another player. I think if he plays again, he would be like one of the standout. He might be my winner pick if he's back to play again, because I think people would underrate him. I think he needs like his first game under his belt. I don't know if he doesn't have Jesse kind of pulling the strategic strings and operate. Like he's extremely social, extremely likable. So he's got that box absolutely checked. I think if he gets to Final Tribal Council, I think he can get a lot of jury votes just by being likable and being a very social person. I think he might struggle with the strategic part alone. And that especially because he's such a social threat, he's going to get taken out more often than not before Final Tribal Council even happens, where people are going to realize, wow, he's so charming and he's so likable. that it actually works against him. And this is also why I left Caleb off the list. Caleb and Cody, to me, are two people that are so charming and so likable that you do not want to let them get to the end. And especially because Cody doesn't have, I mean, not that he was a poor strategist. He did, he actually was playing very hard and was,
I mean, he pulled the Jesse. Justine move. That was like all him.
Yeah. I mean, he was a very good player. I think him getting to the end is very, very unlikely. And I don't think, like, I don't think he has the chops on a first time playing around to see that he's going to get sniped, that he's going to get blindsided because he is such a big threat. So, and with that, I do love Cody, and he, I very much considered him. This wasn't like I just left him off, because I was just like, man, if Cody plays 20 all newbie seasons, I don't think he's winning any of them. Like, maybe he wins one time if something really falls into place, or he can go an immunity run at the end. But like, that's
fair. Thought. But I also feel like with Cody, like, there has to be something said for the game he actually played as well. And the game True. He played was so charming and so well done. He did a great job with the beware advantage in that season, with the beads and everything like that. Like, he really was working it. And yes, Jesse gets him first, but we both have Jesse much higher on our list. If he's playing with somebody less strategically savvy than Jesse, it actually probably works in his favor. He probably does win that season because he gets to the end and he gets the votes. Out of those final six people, Cody was the person who was the most well-liked by the entire cast. And so if he sits at final three, he might even beat Jesse.
I don't think he beats Jesse after Jesse's. Obviously, well, his move took out Cody, so it's a little like, mm-hmm. how are we even parsing that out? But if he took out somebody else but did the same thing, like flushing Carla's idol, making up the knowledge is power thing with Drew, I mean, Dwight's idol, I don't know. I don't think anyone's beating Jesse if Jesse gets to the end that season. Mm-hmm. But the fact he is, again, it's because he's so likable and charming. I think most seasons don't, like almost every season, is that he's not allowed to go to Final Tribal Council.
Yeah, that's fair. I liked his game on that season. It was also one of the gameplays that I could remember the most, because a lot of these like 25 to 15, it's like, I kind of remember what this person did. But anyway, so number 24, another one that is strictly mine. And look, as controversial as the vote was, I still had Maria in my top 25. I still feel like Maria played an excellent game of Survivor. Her strategy with Charlie was great. If that vote at the Final Tribal Council goes to Charlie instead of Kenzie, I think people have a much different view of Maria leaving that season. She plays a strong game, especially for the older woman archetype. She plays back and forth. She's very competitive. She gets a great relationship with Charlie going. And the two of them are looking to blindside each other. And she understood that those moves needed to be made. She was the one who was going over to Q to try to build the relationship after everybody's ostracizing Q. We see her talking to other people. I know there's been some exit press stuff that makes it seem like, well, Maria wasn't actually as smooth as the game showed her to be.
But we saw some of her flaws too. Yeah. This is tough for me. I think Maria's. I'd sooner have Maria in my top 25 than Cody, because I think she probably wins. She's a better chance at winning. She was just a little messy towards the end. The whole reward thing with the rock, paper, scissors. I think that was really poorly handled. There is something to be said for her getting like a standing ovation, but I'm not sure if that was because she was like a slam dunk to win, or is more like, wow, look at this, you know, the older woman archetype kicking ass and making it this far, everyone just wanting to recognize and appreciate that. I don't know. I just don't know if Maria's game was great up until a point. It kind of like the wheels kind of just came off towards the end. So I don't know. Yeah,
With the beginning of this episode, I said like there were certain people where it just fell apart for them at the end. And Maria was one of those. I feel like Carla was one of those people. And like, for me, Maria very well could have won this season and was playing such a strong game. And she just had one absolute horrific blunder, but she's somebody who I'm not going to take the one horrific blunder and say, okay, that's it, done.
Right.
Cause I do feel like if Maria played again, I feel like Maria could win for sure. I think people would be scared to work with her because of the whole Charlie situation, what we saw on TV, but I do think she could win.
Yeah, I don't know. It felt like she was kind of rubbing people. And it's, I don't know, 46 is tough because I think Q is such a dominant force. And there was part of, it felt like part of the other post-merge players were like, kind of like upset that Maria and Q became so close. And I think it was smart by Maria to use Q to her advantage and form that tight bond. But some people were like, why are you working with him? He's like ruining all the games. And like, you were even speculating that like Q did something that we didn't even see because it was like this kind of group mob hate towards Q, and that Maria going to work with him. Yeah. Well, it might be good strategically. I think might have just kind of put people off on her, and it would be not that she doesn't have the strategic chops, but yeah, I don't know. Maria's a tough one. I understand why she's in your list. Mm-hmm.
All right. We're getting to number 23. And finally, it's a Will person. Here we go. We have Evie at number 23. Will, I think you had Evie at 18 on your list.
Which might feel high. Evie is a player where her winning upside is very high, I think. I think she really understood the dynamics of her tribe. On her starting tribe, she was working with everybody. She had an alliance with Tiffany, Liana, and Xander, was pretty much getting the center of information on her tribe, kind of how Jesse was on his tribe. Any of these really strong, dominant, like narrator type players who are super strategic, Evie falls into that category for me. She really was the center of power. And then basically once they merge and it's the mergatory and all this stuff, and she almost goes home, but that Xander doesn't play his idol, and Sydney goes home because she plays Shot in the Dark. She almost went home there. And then we get the tribe split. She just gets eliminated because they split into two groups and she didn't have any numbers and she's a social threat. I just feel like Evie on any given season has like a pretty solid shot to win. So yeah, she understood the game well and just fell into a really bad spot.
I feel like Evie understood the game really well. I feel like Evie got to show off social and strategic prowess early on in the season, in the pre-merge of 41. And then, so quickly after the merge happened. And granted, the merge situation in 41 is the worst merge situation of all time because the players didn't know what was going on. And then, you know, that's where Erica, we'll get to Erica later, obviously. But like, Evie definitely suffered from that. And then Evie has this, you know, because that just threw everybody's game off into such a way. I almost feel like people didn't even know what they could trust and what they couldn't anymore. Evie didn't end up making my list just because I feel like as we've gotten further removed from the season, I feel like we've seen players just play it better than Evie. But you're probably right. Evie probably could win a season.
I didn't like what was her big miss? I don't think she really made that big of a mistake. I think she played as well as she possibly could have pre-merge on her yellow tribe. And then once the shenanigans at the merge happen, it's just a mess. And I don't really fault her for her elimination. Like, I don't think it's like inherent to her as a player. So that's why I have her so high. I think she's like someone on any random season you put her on, she has a very good chance to, I think she's someone who can win and get votes. Mm-hmm. Get votes and win. Yeah.
We got a super like here from Jack Wolf. Thank you, Jack. With a lack of returnee seasons and the threat past winners pose on these seasons, do you think we'll ever see another two-time winner? And if so, who? You're going to have to listen to this whole podcast before I answer that. I can't answer that now because that might reveal who my number one is or who my number two is. So we appreciate this super like for sure. Thank you a lot. But we will have to get to that answer later on in the episode as to not
spoil that's ranking. True. That is true. But we will get to it.
All right. Number 22. This is actually a player we both had. Finally, the first one in the top 25.
Really?
We both have. Yes. We just both had her very low, and it is Julie Alley. Julie from season 45. I had her at spot 23 and you had her at 20. So she gets to come on in here at number 22 ahead of a couple people that only are she's behind a couple people that only one of us had, but still, here we are. She gets in here right now. And what do you think about Julie's placement here?
I think this is about right. I think as long as she survived the pre-merge, just like survived being the like older woman archetype, which she did well. And she was really good at challenges. So I think on most seasons, she's like not immediately pointed out as like a challenge liability or anything. So I think she gets pretty far. And then that archetype starts working in your favor the deeper you go into the game, because we've seen so many older women play who have not been given credit. for what they're doing, or that they're not viewed as a threat. But because she's so damn likable and charming, that, and we saw it on her season in 45, that once it started getting down to like final seven, final six, it was like, we need to eliminate her, because if she gets to the end, she will win. I don't know if it's like, I don't put her in like the Caleb Cody camp of being so charming and likable that she's never going to sniff Final Tribal Council. But I do think she's like very much, she had a great mind for the game. Just a great presence who on like is going to probably get far and have a crack at winning on a good amount of seasons she plays as a newbie.
Yeah, they've done a really good job, I think, of casting the older woman archetype over the last seasons with Maria and Julie. Those were two women who could have, well, Heather, trust me, I wanted to go all the way back to 39 and include Janet Carbon in that, but I couldn't include Heather from 41. But I feel like there's so many. They're like, these are two women who could absolutely win the game. And Julie played strong. And I know there's going to be a lot of people who say, well, Julie was just like, Dee was making the decisions for her at the episode where Julie plays the idol. It's to get Emily out of the game and all that. But you have to make the relationship with the people so that you can be in that position. How many people have had idols and don't have anybody to talk to who will help them or are trying to book them out of the game? Dee was making use of Julie, knowing that now if she sits next to Julie at Final Tribal Council, she can raise her hand exactly as she did next to Austin and say, I actually knew about this and I'm the reason that Julie did what she did. That's a game-winning move. We saw it win the game for her. But Julie had to position herself in that way. If Julie can get rid of Dee, Julie very easily could win that season. And I think she played a really impressive game. And she's only 50 right now. So she's somebody on season 50 who could absolutely come back. And especially, you know, as we're sitting here talking about this, Kim Johnson passed away yesterday from Survivor Africa, the oldest woman to ever make a Final Tribal Council. And it's funny because, like, she really did lay the groundwork all the way back in season 3. And we have not seen a woman of her age. We've seen some older women like Julie, you know, even though they're not like super, they're not like over 50. But we haven't seen somebody of her archetype quite make it as far. And I feel like Julie Alley is probably the closest we got to that. And if she were to play again, I could absolutely, well, Janet Carbon's the closest we got to that. But if either one of them played again, I could see either of them winning.
Yeah, I buy all that. I think this is the right spot. What ranking 22? Is that where you said
22? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
All right. This next one's another one of mine, and this is probably going to be my most controversial one, but my reason for this is because I think all facets of Survivor need to be taken into account when you're doing these rankings. And I don't really think there's any doubt about this one, considering what we watched on season 42. And we have Jonathan at 21, and this is my fault. This is my fault for anybody who's wondering. Don't worry, there's going to be something Will does later on in this episode that everybody will have a fit about, and it's going to be his fault. So I'll take the blame on this one because Will's is much worse than mine. But
really,
this is, yeah, yeah. So this is my fault. I had him at 17, but you know what? There is something to be said for a player who is so unbelievably physical. And you could actually make the argument that, well, Hunter was better at challenges. But Jonathan was better at challenges and was also in an alliance that got him deep into the game. He wasn't going to beat Marianne at Final Three. Like, that was not going to happen. But he could have beaten Mike Turner and Romeo had he gotten to the Final Three with Mike Turner and Romeo. That's a crazy thing to think about. I know the jury didn't love Jonathan, but Mike Turner's Final Tribal Council performance was not good. And if he has that same Final Tribal Council performance sitting next to Romeo and Jonathan, people might say, okay, we have to vote for Jonathan. And Jonathan might be able to speak that out.
Mike still beats
Jonathan. I mean, Mike probably does, but Mike went in the favorite.
I think Jonathan, like, really, I don't see him winning any season, man. Like, I get what you're saying. Like, I want to represent challenge strength, but he's too much of a physical threat.
Well, but he made it to Final Four as a physical threat. We never see that. We never see a physical threat as dominant as Jonathan make it that deep anymore. Never.
I think he was kind of a goat, though. I really do.
But okay, but if you sit in a Final Three with all goats,
like Lindsay had completely turned on him, and Lindsay's in that jury at what? She goes home at Final Five, so she's got a couple nights in Ponderosa to be like, we're not voting for Jonathan. I just don't see Jonathan winning a season.
So again, though, going into this, I don't really, my ranking's not totally just based on could they win a season, especially.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I'm just explaining.
You know, because down at 17. And I think that challenge that he broke, like where Jeff literally had to cancel the challenge and remove everybody from it, but Jonathan was still going. Survivor, you need to be able to look at that stuff. And that's like when Ozzy gets ranked. Ozzy's strategic gameplay is pretty bad in Survivor. Like, it's pretty bad. Even like you go all the way back to Cook Islands, he's throwing challenges at final 19 to get people voted out of the game. And that's why he's the only one from his original starting tribe to even make the merge of that season. But his physical gameplay is so incredible that you can't help but acknowledge it. And when Jonathan was able to break that one challenge and was able to keep going, it was so impressive. And I really do think that he had good relationships for the most part. Again, they started to fall apart towards the end, which I've talked about. But I'm not going to sit here and say, I don't think he beats Marianne, but you could say, oh, he's a GOAT. But it started to feel like with how Mike Turner's final tribal council performance was, a GOAT may have just won that season. So
see, I'm more of the thinking that Mike did not have a good final tribal council performance, but he still played a very, very good game. Mm-hmm. And if he's sitting next to Romeo and Jonathan, despite a not as strong of a performance from him, he can still win and get votes because the two people he's sitting next to, he just played such a more clear, obvious, stronger game. And he just ran into one of the best, probably the best final tribal performance of the new era, I would say, in Marianne, who just absolutely crushed it. So it's hard to say, like, yeah, Mike wasn't great, but he was also up against someone who was so well spoken and so good in that final tribal council. It's why it makes all these rankings tough. But I believe Mike would have beaten Jonathan and Romeo.
It's the fun part about subjective ranking, right? It's like,
there we go.
Here we are. And so now we're gonna be in the top 20. So we had, again, just to recap, the 25 to 21. It was Cody, Maria, Evie, Julia, and Jonathan. Number 20. So 20, 19, and 18 are actually all people that only one of us had, and that's the last time that happens. And then once you get into the top 17, we had both across the board. Number 20 is Carolyn. I ranked her at 15, and again, this is personality, but also I think the thing with Carolyn that gets overshadowed is she sat next to Jam Jam at Final Tribal Council. Jam Jam, her, and Carson as the Tika 3 were working together the entire time. She can't get the votes over Jam Jam. She probably can't get the votes over Carson, but her being a zero vote finalist is more that because she was sitting next to Jam Jam, every vote that was going to go for one of the Tika 3 was going to go to Jam Jam. Bad game plan on her part, sure. But if you think about some of the strategic moves that Carolyn made earlier in the game, the birdcage idol was something that shocked everybody. Her threat level was so low that nobody even assumed she had it. They assumed somebody else had it. And she's going back hiding the X and doing all that stuff. She's an unbelievable personality, which sometimes, and I don't do this much, but like sometimes you just have to say, Coach is never going to win Survivor, but Coach is a top 100 Survivor player just because of what he brings for the game. Because yeah,
depends what we're ranking.
Right? Yeah. And so for me, it's like Carolyn had to be included in here. I put her at spot 15. I felt like that was a good spot for her. It puts her in here at number 20, which honestly I think is a good spot, even without you having her in the top 25. I think 20 is a totally fair spot for a zero vote finalist. But I think that like when we remove ourselves 10 seasons from season 44, she's going to be the player, the Rudy of the situation where people are like, damn, she is so much fun. She's the personality. She's the one that we're talking about.
I think there's no debate or discussion of whether she's fun or has a big personality. Like, everyone loves Carolyn. We want to see more of her. She's going on another TV show. That's how good she was. Like, that's how fun she was to watch. She's going on the Traitors. It's just how you do your rankings. If it's like, here are like the best players of the new era that were providing entertainment, sure, I think she needs to be on your list. She might even be number one. If it's best players of the game Survivor, I think it's not that saying that she is not a strategic player or didn't understand the game. I think she absolutely did. I think it's more of her, you know, very unique, loud, chaotic ball of energy, just this really unique person. I think that personality is really hard to get a jury to vote for you and take you seriously as someone who like dominated the game strategically. So that's why I've left her out, but I've mentioned that. So
yeah, nope, that's fair. Okay, so these next two are all Will, and these we're not at the problematic stuff yet, so don't worry.
Uh-oh.
Number 19 is Tiffany. And this is Tiffany from season 46.
How do you know?
Well, I'm assuming it's Tiffany from season 46. If you have Tiffany from 41 ranked higher than Ricard, we have an issue here. So you had Tiffany from 46 at number 13. I didn't put her on my list. And my thing was, I felt like she had the card stacked against her, but I feel like she kind of just like fumbled as much as she could have. But I do also understand the argument, especially from the criteria you're using of why you'd put her this high. So why don't you talk about Tiffany a little bit?
I mean, again, this is a player who pre-merge on a really, really bad starting tribe, but she was at the center of that tribe. She had basically two number ones. She had number one with Q and a number one with Kenzie. She was never a threat. She was never going to go home pre-merge until it's like a swap. Like, she was just in the power position, and players who are able to do that on their starting tribes, that shows me they have awareness of the game. They have social ability to make relationships, and they can drive votes and be in the know. So like, anytime a player does that, that's why I had Evie on this list. It shows me that you are capable of like running a strategic game. Once she got to the post-merge, everyone knew that she had an idol because Q spilled the beans. That put a huge target on her back. And she actually made a good play in not playing it one time and was able to shift the vote off her by telling people, hey, I'm going to play my idol tonight. And they moved the vote away from her. That was a great play by Tiffany. I also think she's super likable, charming, smart, all these things that like a good Survivor player and a, you know, future Survivor winner. Those are traits that winners often have, socially well-liked and also can play strategically. So I think Tiffany on any given season, like if she plays again, one of these people, it's like, she's going to be like her floor is very, very high.
I think she's never pre-merge.
Like almost every time she plays and like, you know, we simulate 100 times, she's making the merge very, very often. And
she's,
I think
it's gonna be the Malcolm winning situation for her.
Yeah, I think she has great winning situation because she's likable, but she's not overly like charming in your face. She's strategic, but not like this dominant force that's gonna be like, whoa, we gotta get Tiffany out. And I think it really was the idol that screwed her, and having a chaotic ally like Q that happens to be on your starting tribe that, you know, you are close with, kind of ruins your game. So that's why I have her. I'm surprised you did not have her on this list.
I considered her, and I considered the next person as well, who I didn't put. The thing with Tiffany, I think also it's hard too when this season's so fresh in my mind, and Tiffany was my preseason winner pick, and then Tiffany like ends up finishing where she does, getting voted out with an idol in her pocket. Like, those types of things always hurt. I also feel like a lot of players on the season were a step ahead of Tiffany. And I do think for somebody who was on such a bad starting tribe, a lot of times we see those people overplay, and somehow she got back to the point of underplaying. And so I feel like a lot of people were just a step ahead of her, which is why ultimately I didn't include her, but she was definitely in consideration. I had like four or five people in consideration at the end, including the next person. Are you good for me to go to the next one, or did you want to say something else? Okay. The next person, which is number 18. You had this person ranked at number 12. I did not have this person. Definitely somebody who was in consideration, but I just wasn't sure where it fit. And that's Kelly Nabaldian. I can never say her last name, but that one from season 45. For me, it was just somebody who the potential is there. Absolutely. And this could be your female Boston Rob, where, okay, we saw the potential in Marquesas, and then after All-Stars, now it's a top 10 player of all time. I could see that happening with Kelly, where we see the potential, we bring her back because we want to see that potential realized. But her going out as early as she did is ultimately what kept me from putting her onto my list.
Yeah, I feel that. I mean, she's definitely the earliest person that made it, like earliest boot to make it onto my list, and she is quite high. I just think I don't need to be a broken record here. She has the chops to go. I think her floor is also very, very high. Like, I see her basically getting to the merge on almost every season she plays in. She's someone who's social, likable, strategic, like is able on her starting tribe to find relationships, be the power, be the center. And then, you know, the merge, it's such a mess with the new era, man. It's like such a mess. And I'm not going to sit here and fault Evie, Tiffany, and Kelly and be like, yeah, well, they went home early merge, so that means they're like not as good as players as some people who got like fifth or sixth place. When I think on any average season, those three players are more likely to actually get the W, actually get the $1 million. So I'm not just going based on, you know, the results of their finished placement. So, yeah. Now, I think I have probably frozen, or is Phil frozen? Can't tell which one of us it is. It's probably me, but in case it's not, I'm going to keep talking and reload this thing. Is it me or is it Phil? It's Phil who froze. I thought it was me this whole time. So I guess that's Phil's fault. Unfortunately, I do not have the ranking, so I can't even keep going here with this. I mean, I can make a guess. I wonder what Phil is so mad about. I'm looking at the rest of my list. He might... No, I don't know. I don't know. He keeps giving me crap for something on my list, and I just don't see a player that would make him this angry, especially if they haven't been said yet. It means I had them pretty darn high. So, and not high as in high from season 42. So, all right, how about we get some questions in here? Any questions while we wait for Phil? Again, I don't have the list. Maybe Phil can send it to me, so this podcast doesn't go for 2 hours. Let me see. Let's see here. I should fill this space while I'm texting Phil. Where did you rank Brad? I remember JD saying that Brad was like the most underrated player from 41. And that if Brad plays again, that he'd have a very, very good chance, and that he was also a great character, and that if he wanted anybody, any returning player from 41, it should be Brad. That was a bold take by JD. I do not have Brad on my list here. Hard to put a pre-merger on here. I don't think we have any, and like Phil just didn't have Kelly on, and a big reason he didn't have Kelly on clearly was because she went home so early. Why is Cody so low? We went over it. If you missed it, you have to go back and listen. We explained it. At least I explained it, where I think that Cody on a second time has tremendous upside to win, but on a first time, I think it's hard for him to get to the end. I think he is so likable, charming. He has that kind of salesman, just that utter essence and energy that you are attracted to and like, but that kind of targets you on Survivor. It makes you a really big target. I also think just being paired with Jesse, someone who's so, so, so good strategically, really helps him through that game. And that Cody might, I know Phil made the argument, hey, because he had Jesse, that actually was a downfall for his game because Jesse ends up taking him out because Jesse is so strategic. But I honestly think if Cody's not with Jesse, he might get blindsided earlier. Because if you don't have Jesse looking out for you, making those strategic moves, I don't know what Cody's playing on completely on his own. What is your favorite new area? I love 43. I think it's full of surprise, shocks, twists. So we have Phil.
I'm back. Derek.
There he is.
Dude, internet just totally crashed where I am. Can't get anything to load. And then getting into StreamYard on your phone is like Fort Knox, man. My goodness. It was
you got to keep our stream. Yeah. Okay. Let's keep going with the rankings. I said what I needed to say. I mean, I think Kelly, Evie, and Tiff are all kind of same bag for me.
Okay. Next up, I know for sure. So what number was that? Kelly was 18, right? Sorry, I don't know if I can actually go to it on my phone while I'm looking at this. But so I know next up is Cassidy. And this is the one that I think, Will, you're going to get a little bit of flack for. Because you had Cassidy down at 24. And I had Cassidy much higher. And there's a couple people now from her season that – I think people are going to be like, Will, what did you do? But why did you end up with Cassidy at 24?
Because she got the final Tribal Council and didn't win. And those are people that I all like. If you got to the end and then did not receive votes to win, I couldn't rank you all that high because I've seen the full extent of your game. I've seen what a jury thinks of you. And yes, she was able to get one vote. And, you know, Gabler did play a good game. I think we are two of like, we're not staunch Gabler defenders, but we do appreciate what he did and why he won. But I feel like if Cassidy was like, if she's going to be like a top 15 player, she needs to get more than one vote against Gabler. And that's really it. But she's in my top 25. I do think there's a situation where Cassidy has winning upside whenever she goes out to play. I just don't know how frequent it is. Like, that win rate is not as high as some of these other people. Like, I think Evie, Tiff, and Kelly, that kind of group that I've been saying that, like, we saw them really play well pre-merge and actually ran things on their tribe, and they just kind of, you know, the circumstances don't work out for them. Like, those players are players more where I think if they get to Final Tribal Council, they're probably winning, if not getting at least a few more votes. So we've seen Cassie's full extent of her game. But, I mean, good for her. She didn't get voted out. But she wasn't really front running either. She wasn't leading the charge. And you even had her saying, like, one of her best moves was like pulling or the Ryan vote, I think, when they did that split and swap. And then Cody and Jesse were like, no, we pulled in Gabler. It was between you. Like, we were the ones pulling that. Like, she just didn't dictate enough on her season. And it's not really a knock. It's just more that, like, I couldn't have her all that much higher because we saw her full game and she didn't get votes.
Yeah, I ended up putting Cassidy as high as I did. And I think a lot of this comes down to where do you actually view Gabler's game? Survivor Archivist here says Cassidy didn't even lose to a huge stretch.
He That's lost part to of it too. Yeah.
But I also probably have a higher respect for Gabler than most people do. And you already mentioned that. But that's for me where, like, I'm not going to punish Cassidy for losing to Gabler in the way that a lot of people would. And what is really funny to me is, like, when you look at the internet, a lot of the time it's Cassidy is one of the best players of the new era. Gabler is shit. But it's like, but Gabler beat Cassidy. So, like, both of those things, in my opinion, can't be true. And I think with Cassidy, though, I respect her gameplay. I like what she was able to pull off. I like how she was able to navigate her original starting tribe. She doesn't have a massive move, but I still feel like from the people from her starting tribe, I feel like she was the, you know, she's probably the best player from that starting tribe, that Coco tribe out there. And so that's why I ended up having her. I don't know my exact number because, again, now I just totally lost this. And if I go over my screen, it won't show me. Here's what happens when I go if everybody wants to look at me. There I am.
That's fine, though. Maybe post it in the private chat, Phil, so I can see it at least. And then
I shared it with you. I can't post it in the private. I have to find a, hang on. But anyway, I had Cassidy at number, what number is that? I had Cassidy at 13. So the same spot where you had Tiffany and then you had her at 24. So that's what ended up happening there.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of agree with Survivor Archivist who says Gabler's not that, because Gabler, while we can respect his win and see why he won, I think we do so pretty fairly, it's not like Gabler was like the dominant force in that season whatsoever. So it was kind of anyone's game to come in and take down at Final Tribal, and she wasn't able to do that. So,
yeah. Okay.
All right, well, who's next?
I just got a notification that we're estimated restoration is 5 p.m. and that's not good because I'm on the East Coast or I'm on the West Coast. So anyway, Will, we're probably doing it this way. So you guys won't be able to look at my face. That's okay.
Number
16 is Emily. So Emily coming in right ahead of Cassidy here. A couple more points in the ranking than what Cassidy ended up with. Emily, in my ranking, I had her at 18. In your ranking, you had her one spot higher in 17. So we're almost in exact agreement on her. So it's funny, we put her at 18 and 17, and then she comes in at 16 in the aggregate because of just the way that it shakes out, having some people and not having others. What was it with Emily that ended up making you rank her here? Because I don't see her winning many newbie seasons. Do you?
I think if she survives her first kind of her, I think she opens as kind of like she rubs people the wrong way. Her personality is a bit abrasive, but she's quickly able to adapt. And I think any player that shows the ability to change themselves and adapt and change to the people around them is always going to have a good chance to continue further into the game. A little bit like Kathy Van Rick O'Brien for Marquesas, where she did not fit in. She was the wrong way. And then when she kind of figures it out and really adapts to the people around her, she is able to almost get to the end and win the whole thing. And that's kind of, I see Emily. I mean, we saw her. She clearly understands the strategic part of the game. For me, it's like, if she can survive her kind of social faux pas early, that she will be in a season to win it once she gets through that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I really love, like, Emily's storyline. And I feel like Emily was somebody, at John says there, the most impressive thing about Emily's performance is how adaptable she is.
That's why she's on the list, like, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like Emily probably gets votes if she gets to the end. It's just, how does she get to the end, because she started to become a threat. And we see her even at the whose boot is it again? I can't be checking, but whose boot is it where she's bragging? It was Bruce, where she's bragging to everybody about, like, that was me, I did this. And that's an overplay that you don't want to be doing. Like, it really raised her threat level, which was terrible for her moving forward. But Emily, like, I still had to put her in here in the top 20 because she is somebody who was able to overcome so much, was incredibly popular, almost like to the level of Carolyn, and actually got into a position where votes could have been had for her. So I think Emily's game's an impressive one. I think a lot of people would probably put her closer to, like, you know, top 10 or something like that. And I think that's too high, but I think that's, where we end up with her right here is good.
Yeah, I think 16 is about right. Maybe even a little high. I feel like if she gets the final tribal council, I think she's probably a pretty good speaker and can make a very compelling case, especially if she's forced to adapt in a lot of games she plays. And then that's kind of what I'm thinking, is that she is going to go in with a certain way of being and playing, and she will have to adapt. So she will be able to have, like, this really strong story and narrative to her final tribal council should she get there.
Mm-hmm. How do I sound right now? Am I sounding okay?
Yeah, not great, but we can hear you.
Okay, good. Like, is my internet at least clear right now while I'm on my phone?
Yeah, no, it can hear. It's not as, it doesn't sound as crisp and sharp as it was earlier, but it'll get the job done.
What a bummer, man. We get this great podcast going, and here we are. All right, at number 15, we have Mike Turner. So Mike Turner, I had at spot 16, and Will, you had Mike Turner at spot
19, right?
19. So, yeah, so just a little bit below me. He comes in here at spot number 15. I feel like, again, we've talked about him a lot with the Marianne situation. Marianne has a great final tribal council, and that seems to be kind of what did Mike in. I liked Mike's storyline, how he was really trying to get to know people on a really personal level and all of that, which is why I ended up putting him here, even though he does get smoked at the final tribal. Like, he loses very badly.
I had to ding him hard enough on his final tribal performance, but, like I've already mentioned, if he's not sitting next to Marianne, the game he played and the relationships he made could have still resulted in a win despite a final tribal council where he doesn't fully own his game. That is for sure his biggest flaw. If he had gone to tribal council, I mean, like, yeah, I was playing hard, playing to win. I didn't make relationships so I could, you know, pull an over on you or blindside you and, like, get to the end and get money for my family. Like, I think that ownership would lead to a win. And he did not do that whatsoever. And again, the Marianne thing, she was so, so good. But yeah, I think we've talked about Mike. This is about right for him.
Yeah, I think it's about right. Sorry, I think I'm back. I think the internet's back. I think I sound better. I think this should be good now for the remainder of the podcast, and hopefully we can roll through. Okay, let me just pull up the list over here. I'll pull it up on my phone so we can get to the next person here. So yeah, I feel like this is a good spot for Mike at 14. So this is the one where I was making the comment about, Will, like, you might get a little shade because this was pretty much like the ranking here happened because of you. I feel like Carla comes in at 14. And the Cassidy stands, I think, are going to be coming for you pretty hard here. What was it about Carla that made you rank her so much higher than Cassidy?
I think Carla has a better chance to win at the, should she get the final tribal council, than Cassidy. I think if it's Carla, Gabler, and Owen, Carla is winning that season. We saw the result with Cassidy, and she did not win. So that's my answer. I think it's pretty clear. I mean, you could argue that Gabler beats Carla, and I would be open to believing that or having that conversation. For me, I think Carla played a strong enough front-running, more dominant game where she was in positions to make decisions, and that results in more jury votes than Cassidy's game.
Yeah, Carla was a weird one for me. I only ranked her at 24. So she comes in on our list at 14. And Will, you had her at 9, and I had her at 24. And Carla was one where I feel like anywhere in the range of like 24 to 15 was fair for her, in my opinion. And you had her higher than that, which is fine. But I do think that, like, for her, her game was so up and down. Like, she had so many strong moves, so many bad moves. And then for her to go out like where she did, I know for a while people thought she was going to end up being the winner of the season. I feel like we probably ended up with her at the right spot here. I still probably would have put Cassidy. I think Cassidy should have been above Carla, but Mike and Emily coming in behind Carla, I'm not really like too shocked or disappointed with. She was one of those, you rank her at 24. But like I said, if she comes in all the way at 15 or even 14 here, one spot higher, I'm not floored by it or sitting here saying, Will, you're, what is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Some are saying above Cassidy, you know, you're going to get.
I think I made shade. My Cassidy point pretty clearly that I think Cassidy has a stronger chance to. That's the goal. The goal is to win. It's not to get to the end. It is to win. And Carla has a better chance of winning because she plays a little bit riskier and plays a little bit more of a dominating game. Again, throw Carla in this bucket. Now I have this big old bucket with Evie, Tiffany, Kelly, and now throw Carla in there as players on their starting tribes who are the focal point, who are the ones making all the relationships, all the decisions. She was able to convince Gio and Ryan that she was with them, make them not worried at all. She had the real alliance with James, Cassidy. She even had Lindsay Carmine in there, and then they had to vote her off because something was going up in the paranoia. But she was deciding all the votes. Her and James were, that's why I had James on this list too, because he wasn't the narrator, but he was at least in the decision-making seat. And those are the players that often end up winning these games, as you'll see.
Bobo Joe, Carla is probably better at making those relationships than Cassidy, which I think is fair.
Yeah, I think she's playing a more winning upside game. So, yeah.
All right, so we're at 13, and I just want to make a quick mention of there's a gap here now. So Cody came in, he only had 6 points at number 25. Carla just was 14 with 19 points. Now we get into 25 points for 13 and the gap, you know, and then it starts to broaden a little bit. So just like a pretty big jump here. And at 13, we have Austin. So this was a player, Will, you had him at 16. I had him at 11. He comes in ultimately at number 13. I think what's so impressive about Austin is to get 3 votes against D with the game that D played, I think is undervalued in this community because Austin ended up, I think, with the most confessionals on that season, but he didn't feel like the most interesting person on that season. And I think that's hurt him in terms of how people view him and how people like discuss him. But to lose to D by what is essentially 1 vote is pretty remarkable and shows how strong of a game he really was playing.
Yeah, no, Austin, I probably could have had Austin higher. I docked him for not having the killer instinct that D had. Like, we saw him have a chance to pull one over on D, not tell her what was going to happen. And he spills the beans. He lets his emotions get to the best of him. And that's like a blunderous move. And then D is able to go tell Julie to play her idol while D is like pretending to not know that, you know, to actually go along and pretending that she's involved in this plan to get Julie out. I mean, it was the masterclass from D, but I have this like great example of Austin, like not taking like that cutthroat move that you often need to do to win a game that's as cutthroat as Survivor is. So that's why I'm down at 16. But yes, he was able to get 3 votes against a very, very, very strong Survivor player. So,
yep. I feel that. And the reason he lost is because of that. Like, it's not just like you're knocking him for not having the cutthroat move. He loses because of that. Cause that really was, I think, the turning point at that final tribal council was when D admitted like,
definitely. No,
I
knew. And it's supposedly she had said that earlier. And then it was, they edited it to make that like the big reveal that was going to like, you know, solidify her win. But yeah.
Yeah. But Austin's definitely an underrated finalist. I feel like in this community, somebody probably deserves more credit than he gets.
So he ended at 13 or 12. I think that's 13. Like about fair. Yeah. I think that's 13. Right in line.
Yeah. 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 Right in line. You had him at 16. I had him at 11, 13 comes in. I think that's a good spot. Number 12, we have Shan, and Shan is somebody who this is, I think, probably the ultimate fall apart in like Survivor history. Like, she plays such a strong game early on in this and like has to, because that Uwa tribe is such a disaster, and makes such a good relationship with Ricard and gets deep. And then the game just seems to get to her. And it's like in the second half of the game, we were seeing a completely different Shan than the one we were seeing in the first half of the game. And that's why ultimately I only ended up putting her at, I still put her at 14. Will, you put her at 11, but this, she was on route to being like a top player. People were just going to be loving her. She's going to be a fan favorite, all of that. And then we actually did our second chance ballot with Russell Muscle TV, and she didn't actually get voted in despite being one of the names on there. And that was really shocking to me. So I don't know if her challenge game or something really lowered her.
I feel like it might be some non-show stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like off, like I'm looking at her just from her game and not what extracurricular things.
I agree with you 100%. Yes.
And Shan, again, put her in this big old bucket, dominated her starting shot.
How big is this bucket?
I think we have 5 players and they're all women, which is interesting. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I don't need to be a broken record. If you are able to be the center of power on your starting tribe, that is a sign that you are a very competent survivor player. And then yes, the merge again. I mean, once the merge happens in these new era seasons, I don't like fault these players completely. She was able to play a really damn good strategic game early. And she still got pretty far. So I think Shan has great winning upside.
Yeah, it's funny, and not to get like, it's not really too much of a tangent, but like it reminds me of, now that I'm watching Australian Survivor for the patrons, because there's so many players and there's so many days, people are playing like making massive moves and then finishing 16th place. And you start to be like, okay, like these games are long and there's so much chaos and there's so much randomness that can happen. I actually think watching Australian Survivor has made me appreciate a game like Shan's a little bit more. Because you can only control what you can control. And the parts that Shan could control, she did a phenomenal job of. It was just the second half of the game became too much for her. But what would happen if she played a second time? I think she'd be pretty damn good. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And that leads us now to number 11, which is the puzzle maker, Carson. So another person, we didn't even put him on our ballot. Will was like, no, he's not going on there. Get him out of here. But
I don't need to see him play again, but I think he's like, 11. He's clearly a really good player. I mean, his whole puzzle practicing strategy, that's going to get him through the pre-merge, I think, almost every season. Cause like, you're not going to vote out the guy who is your puzzle master. And he like worked out and like put on a lot of muscle beforehand. So it wasn't like he was some like scrawny nerd that couldn't handle it physically. So he was actually just an overall really great challenge competitor. And then obviously he's a player with some strategic chops as well. So I think Carson, I mean, he wins fire. Carson versus Jam Jam. I think Jam Jam probably still wins, but it could be close. It could be closer than we think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that people were appreciative of Carson and I think they like enjoyed watching him play. And I think like, for as annoying as it might have been as an audience to see him dominate those puzzles because of something that was outside of like the game, it felt like it prep for the game. Like that's great for him. He did the mm-hmm. most prep out of anybody before going out there. I think he probably gets some votes. I don't know if he beats Jam Jam, but it's close. And again, if we're talking about Austin being impressive for being close against D, I think the same argument can be made for Carson. Carson was very close. The one thing he just forgot to practice was fire. He practiced everything else. He just forgot to practice fire, but he's in a great alliance. He plays a really good game. And yeah, I think he was solid. I do like people now that we have Finn saying he has 6 and Connor saying he's top 5 easy. I don't know about all that.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know if I can put him top
5 or 10.
Top 10. I didn't even put him top 10 because it's like, even if he wins fire, he's still losing. So it's like, how, you know, great player. And I think he does well on any given season, but yeah, I didn't have him top 10.
Yeah, you had him 15. I had him 10. You had him 15. All right, we're into the top 10. So now we are into the creme de la creme of the new era. Mm-hmm. And at number 10, starting that off, we have Ricard coming in here. I had him at spot 8. You had Ricard at spot 14. That averages out to 10. I think the difference for Ricard and Shan, and the reason why I ended up putting Ricard in my top 10 and at number 8 is because Ricard played a really strong game in the pre-merge, And he still played a strong game in the post-merge. And he was a threat to really take it home. I feel like Shan as a threat to actually win the game really disappeared. It really vanished. But Ricard was that person who could win. We have a very nice guy saying here, like, Ricard is overrated in my opinion. I think a lot of people actually do feel that way at this point. Ricard was another one. We put him on the second chance ballot. He doesn't get the votes. He doesn't end up making it. But I think Ricard is a very, very fascinating player who's very good at the game, understands that he's a good physical player.
Really good at challenges, too.
Really good at challenges. Mm-hmm. Really good. So I had to – I think he's a complete package. I don't know if he wins a second chance type season because I think people would probably boot him early because he's a threat. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like new era players playing their first time, out of all the people who didn't win, he's one of the most impressive.
Yes. And he thinks he's the best player.
He Ricard does. Said he's number one. That. Yes.
Honestly, a lot of the reasons you just said are why I have him lower than Shan. I think Ricard's threat level really works against him. Like, he's so good at challenges and he is so strategic. And he played so well, almost too well, to the point where, like, okay, we got to get Ricard out of here. We got to get Ricard out of here. And he kept winning challenge. He kept winning immunity. But it's like, all right, next time, we got to get Ricard out of here. And that Shan, I think, is just a little bit more, like, unassuming and can kind of sneak through. Now, obviously, Ricard lasted longer than Shan, but a lot of that was because Ricard was winning immunity challenges. So they're both right in here, and I think it's fine where we have
them. Yeah. All right, before people lose their minds over this, I just want to say separating ninth place and sixth place was 2 points. That's it. 35 points for ninth place, 36 points. So
these players are all tied pretty much.
Pretty much. 36 points for eighth place, 37 points for sixth and seventh. So, and then that ultimately went to who did we have? Some, we were just doing like a different tiebreaker. We don't need to talk about that. But we have a tiebreaker there so that we didn't have ties throughout. So before people lose their minds over this, I just want to preface that. That being said, I couldn't be happier with this placement. At number nine, we have Erica. And this is pretty much because of me. I put her at number 12, I think. Will, you had her at number five.
Number five.
I had her at number 12. And you know what? Like, bring on the hate, bring on the heat. I don't really care. But she ends up at number nine overall. Man, I have, you said top four minimum. You didn't make that cut.
Finn says, based on Will's philosophy, he better have Erica top four minimum. Sorry.
Here's my deal. Erica plays a solid game. We barely see it. And I've talked about that a lot with Natalie White and things like that. I refuse to look so far into something that I can't see. And Erica's is hidden. We do have the whole episode of Danny and Deshaun talking about her being a threat. We need to get rid of her. All that. I get that. I understand you have to play the hand you're dealt. And you have to play the cards you're dealt. But when your best move in the game is hitting an hourglass, that's problematic for me. So I just have a hard time with
that. I think
that Erica
was her best move. I think her best move was being likable and sociable and getting to know people. So that they give her $1 million. I count that as a move. That's the goal of the game.
I count that as gameplay, but I wouldn't count that as a move. So you're saying Ethan's move was being likable. Like, that's a move. That's gameplay. That's not a move.
Sure. I mean, we can mince words. Like,
Yeah, and she was like one. She got the votes. Yeah, her gameplay was strong. I'm not saying her gameplay wasn't, but I just think she dominated from final. I don't think she did dominate from final eight to final three. I think dominated is stronger. But you had her at five. You still didn't.
I did.
I mean, she's a winner, and we have her ranked as the lowest winner. You did not have her as the lowest winner in your ranking personally. But
no,
what is it about then? What is it about Erica that really like?
Again, I think it's just going with my philosophy on how I rank these players. That I don't need to really repeat it. That I think Erica is going to go far in a lot of games she plays because she doesn't come off as a but she is very strategic. I know her original starting tribe did consider throwing a challenge to get rid of her. I don't know how seriously they wanted to do that, or if that was the show giving us this underdog narrative. Remember, her whole story was like, you know, lamb to lion once she breaks the hourglass. So the show wanted to do everything narratively to put her kind of in a bad negative spot. Then once the hourglass happens, build up their twist. That's the story of then she dominates later in the game when she hits the merge. So I don't know how much we're taking that into account. But that is why I have her not top four. That's why I have her at five and not like number one, because I think she struggled a little bit early. But outside of that, like, she's not a challenge liability, but she's not a challenge threat. think she's super likable, super social, clearly understood the games, understands where the numbers were and how to navigate it all. We didn't see a lot of this, but Erica is doing very well on any given season, I think. So
yeah, I do feel like Erica could fall into the getting voted out early part of it, though. Because I do feel like had her tribe lost in the pre-merge, she very well could have just been that person voted off. She was just on an unbelievably strong tribe. And Danny McRae, somebody who didn't make either of our lists, but I think he was really, I mean, he's somebody who was definitely under consideration for me. I think he played an awesome game and he's so likable. John says apparently that was the edit and they were actually throwing it to put someone else out. I can't listen to Exit Press that much because I don't know.
It's yeah, like I'm just the, saying, like, I remember when I was doing the New Era rewatch, but I was like, it's clear what they're doing with Erica's story. They want you to make her feel like she's an underdog. Like her whole story is based on that. It was Sydney, apparently, is what Finn is saying. But that's fine. I think we have Erica in a fine spot.
And yeah, Erica's at number 9. Between her 9 and 6, she could have easily been 6 had I moved her up like one spot. That's how close this was. At number 8, we have Omer from season 42. This was a player that I had ranked at number 9, and you had Omer ranked actually at number 7. So Omer comes in here, and I was saying that entire season, I felt like Omer had the best feel for the game out of anybody in the New Era, made some absolutely epic moves, and ultimately just got played by somebody who played the game better. But Omer was playing an unbelievable game before he went home, and he's somebody who absolutely gets the votes if he sits at the end. And what works for Omer in Will's talk, and I'm going to speak for Will so he doesn't just repeat himself, I think what works for Omer is he is very unassuming. And so I think if he goes out there for another season, and yeah, Will's talking about newbie seasons, but whether newbie or returning player, he's so unassuming that he could win any season he's on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if he gets to the end, he's winning. And I honestly don't know if anyone else was seeing how shifty and how great a game he was playing, except for Marianne really was onto it because she was working so closely with him. And if Marianne's not there, like he might just dominate that thing and run it out. So yeah, I think Omer is a very strong player. I have him at number 7, and I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I think Omer would be good on any season. Great with strategy. Great with he was even pretty good at challenges because like the puzzles and everything. And he was just really good socially. Just did not realize what a threat Marianne was, and I'm excited to talk about Marianne when we get there. At number 7, we have Charlie from season 46. I had him at number 7. Will, you had him at number 8. Is this recency bias with Charlie, or is this
accurate? No, I think this is accurate because I think there is a case we made that he should have won the game. And if you're that close to winning, you know, one vote away. We don't know what Ben. Do we know what Ben would do in a tie? Did
he would have voted for Charlie? Yeah, he said that.
So yeah, he said
that on our podcast maybe.
Oh yeah, we interviewed him. When you're one vote away from winning, and when we know two of the votes were kind of based on things outside the game, I think it's totally fair to be like, Charlie basically played as good of a game of Survivor as you can play without actually winning. I think that's maybe the best losing game ever. Maybe Dominic has him covered there, but like, okay, top two losing games ever. So I'm totally comfortable putting him up here. He's obviously not like a top 5 player for me. We have Finn saying he's.
Did you not watch 2. All Stars?
I think Charlie might. I think Charlie played a better game than Rob.
Definitely a better social game. That's for
sure. Yeah. Socially is how you get votes, but he didn't get the votes. And we saw him, and there's maybe something about, you know, we've kind of talked about what happened there at the end. We don't need to like rehash it, but yeah, I mean, he played a fantastic game, and this is right on the money, I think, where we have him.
And I think with Charlie too, it was such a hard season to navigate that for him to navigate it as well as he did, being as vocal and obvious of a threat as he was, is really good. Like he was an obvious threat for most of that season. He was, you know, he was doing a good job of managing his threat level, but he was talking to everybody. They knew he was good at challenges, all that. So yeah, I just think that Charlie played about as good as you could to not win the game. And you could argue maybe Kenzie's not the strongest winner ever, but I think Kenzie was a really, 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 really good player. And she earned it. And it's, yeah, to come that close, it's impressive. And Charlie played a really strong game. I am Connor. Every time Gabler doesn't get named, my hope for Phil causing me number one grows. Will, how would you feel if Gabler came in at number 1?
I think that would be, I don't think it's possible.
Yeah, Will like purposely rigged it where he actually didn't include Gabler so that Gabler couldn't be number one. Speaking of Gabler, right here at number six is where Mike Gabler gets listed into here. I had him at number five. You had him at number 10. I can't believe how low you are on Gabler. How could you put Gabler behind Carlo, Will? Come on.
Because I think if Carlo gets to the end, Carlo beats Gabler. And I know she doesn't, but she also got, you know, bamboozled by Jesse, who we've yet to name also. So
I might put Kel as my number one player of all time then, because if he gets to the end, he wins.
Who? Kel?
Yeah, from Australia.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't think he's. I mean, I don't need to keep repeating. It's about winning upside on a given season. I think Gabler, out of all the winners, has the lowest chance to, you know, play a repeatable game. I think a lot of things had to break his way, especially end game, where like if he is sitting next to Carla or Jesse or Cody, he is losing. Like he needed to sit next to Cassie and Owen. And so I do dock him for that. I do think he's someone that like has a pretty high floor, that he is making the merge more often than not, just because he's really, really good around camp, except for putting leaves on people while they're sleeping. Outside of that, seem to do a lot of work. People clearly like the guy. And he, you know, is going to, he's somewhat, I know he's the older guy archetype, which sometimes can get hit with some challenge liability, but he wasn't that. So
no.
He understood the game clearly, and he understands the goal of the game. So I give him a lot of credit for that. I think having him at 10 is very fair.
I think his adaptability, you know, we talked about that with Emily, his adaptability, he never had control of the game. And people will say, oh, that's why he's not that good of a winner. The fact that he never had control of the game and still won is unbelievably impressive, because to do that, you have to constantly be navigating, going up and down. And like he said, with his alligator thing, he made his move. He didn't need to make another move. He played as perfectly as you can after his move, which was a real move. He actually voted out somebody, didn't just smash an hourglass move. And he got the votes at the end. And people can say it's a bitter jury that Cassie played a better game, that Owen played a game. It doesn't matter. He got the votes at the end. No, he would not have beaten Jesse. There is no doubt about it. He would not have beaten Jesse. He would have gotten smoked by Jesse at Final Tribal Council. However, he got to the end without Jesse. He's the one who beat Jesse at Fire, dominated him at Fire, set the record, which was then broken by Heidi a season later, but still set the record. And I just think Gabler, no matter how much people want to like complain about him as, you know, a person, which is insane because he's a great person. I think he's easily top 10. I have him at top five. Yeah. Could I have put him a spot or two lower? For sure. Especially with the people I had right behind him. And you know, we can talk about our actual rankings at the very end, just run through what we each had so people can hear it. But yeah, I think Gabler at six is perfectly fair, and I'm happy we ended up with him here. And he's the fifth highest ranked winner of the new era, in our opinion, which I think is fair, but also he's not far off from two of the other four. He's pretty far off from the other two, but he's not far off from two of the other four. So we're into our top five. We got four winners and a Jesse. Let me see if you can take a guess. Where do you think Jesse ended on this?
My guess is Jesse comes in at fourth.
Fourth. Okay. Okay. It is 1 point separating like five from four, four from three, three from two. It's the numbers are sequential there. And then we have our first place person. So at number five, we have Kenzie. And I mean, again, it's so close between five, four, three, and two. So Kenzie could have easily gone anywhere. I had her at six. You had her at three. And I think Kenzie played a phenomenal game. I think she made the moves she needed to make. 46 is a tough season for me because it's such a chaotic season that I sit there and I say, okay, when it comes to Kenzie on a normal season, sorry, if she played 45, does she win 45? I don't know. She's got the social game for sure, but can she navigate it as well? She had the bigger threats around her, which is smart. She got to the end with people she needed to get to the end with, and she made a hell of a pitch at Final Tribal Council. Kenzie's a phenomenal, phenomenal Survivor player. But I ultimately had her as, I actually put her as the fifth ranked winner of the new era, right behind Gabler. You know, I think there's a gap between her and Erica for sure. And her and Gabler are kind of like interchangeable in my mind. But what made you put Kenzie at three?
She's got that it factor. And we've talked about this. There is just this charm, this charisma, that is just palpable. You can feel it through the TV screen. I can't imagine what it feels like in person. Phil, you had a chance to meet her.
I
imagine she felt or gave off that energy. And, you know, those are the people that are just, they have that it factor. I don't know what to call it. That magic, let's say, that survivor magic. And if they get to the end, they are getting jury votes and winning, because that's this intangible part of their personality that cannot be taught. It can't be learned. It's not a skill. It's just this innate charm. And the two people I have above her also have a lot of that too. Maybe not as much. I think she relies on that probably too much for her winning game, but she goes out and plays. I think she's doing very well many, many times.
Like, yeah.
And if she's going to play newbie seasons. So,
and that's the fact that she's like a smaller player on that initial starting tribe, and a tribe that keeps losing and she hangs around is pretty good. Also, we didn't put Jelinski at 7. What a missed opportunity.
I think she's so good socially, but she's not like a liability when it comes to challenges. And I think she's just, you can bank on her going far and having a shot to win, because we saw her beat a strategically dominant player of this season. Season 46, yeah. Charlie ran the show. I mean, it was Charlie Maria for a while, and then Charlie pulled one over on Maria and then took the reins, got to Final Tribal Council, and then lost to this very social player. That's how good she is. So that's why I have her at 3.
Yeah. No, I feel like that's fair. I mean, I can't really argue with like
William Williams. We have, yeah, I agree. 5. She didn't play the flashiest winning game, but her magmatic personality is unmatched. Very well said.
Bobo Joe asks, how would she rank if she didn't win? Like, had she lost to Charlie 5-3, how far do you think you would have dropped her?
Probably 4 or 5 spots.
Yeah, you think like barely cracking top 10, right?
Yeah, maybe she would be like,
I think 9. That's what I would have done too.
Because it shows that she would still have gotten, let's say, you know,
3 votes.
One of those votes. No, let's say she gets one of it, and then it's a tie and it goes 5-4. She still would have 4 votes to win, and we would be talking about her as having one of the best losing games ever. And that how impressive it was she was able to get 4 votes against the strategically dominant player. So I wouldn't drop her all that low.
I agree.
It's just that charm, man.
I know. And my internet going out here really did throw me off, but Jelinski had reached out and asked if he could be 7B. So we need to make sure that we get that back in here,
okay.
Will, that Jelinski gets in there at 7B. So I just wanted to make sure. My internet threw me off of everything. Number 4 is not Jesse. It's Marianne. And I had Marianne actually at number 2. You had Marianne at number 6. I thought Marianne played such an amazing game. And what made me so happy about Marianne's game is that she never stopped being Marianne. The entire game, she was sincerely Marianne. And the type of person that Marianne is the type of person who goes out early in the game. Loud, a little weird, like just kind of out there. I don't know how else to put it, but like that's the type of player that goes out early. And she overcame people's perceptions of her early on in that game and goes on to win and plays as Marianne the entire time. The Omer situation is so brilliantly handled by her. And then she goes up against what I think is a very, very strong competitor in Mike Turner, and she wipes the floor with him at Final Tribal Council. Just wipes the floor. She is so damn good at that Final Tribal Council. So I had her as the second best player of the new era. I think her game, she did not have to, we talked about adaptability. She didn't have to adapt because she was herself, and people started to understand who that Marianne was, and that ultimately got her the win. And I think that's more impressive sometimes than adapting when you are that type of personality.
Yeah. Love Marianne. I could argue that she played the best game of the new era. And if that were how we were doing our rankings, ranking the 25 games that we have seen, then she might have a case for number 1 or number 2. But for me, sticking with how I'm saying like best players, there's just this chance that Marianne goes pre-merge in a random game that she'd play because she is a little bit loud. We saw Lindsay and Jonathan like complain a little bit about her nonstop energy. And I loved it. We were watching on TV, but we have to realize this is a social game where people are living together and that could send her home earlier in any given season. That's the only reason why I have her at 6 and not higher. But if we were just going based on the results, she might be number 1. So
yeah,
I'm okay with, I think this fits great.
And I went based on results, so I put her at 2. top three. And at number three, somebody who didn't make the final three, that's Jesse finally coming in here at number three. Jesse, I think there's really no question about it. Like, one of the best non-winning games ever. And
I think I could make a case for number one.
He really number does two. Fall into that Rob Cesternino argument.
Number two?
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or at least like best player to not make Fight Tribal Council. Best winning game that didn't best non-final game. Best losing game where the player didn't even make Final Tribal Council, because Charlie and Dominic and Boston Rob are kind of in their own camp, and then like Rob C and Jesse here are kind of in there, and Suri are in like this other world where it's like if they get to the end, we know they're winning. Jesse's so good, and what makes him so good is he's super social, but he's so unassuming, man. Like, people did not see what he and Cody were doing. And he was making these elaborate moves. I mean, getting Dwight's idol using shot in the, or using knowledge as power is just so clever. And that's why
Janine's idol.
It was, yeah, wasn't it? Janine's idol. It was Janine's idol, but Janine had given it to Dwight.
That's right.
Dwight
that's
had
right.
given it to Jesse. And remember, Jesse and Dwight had a falling out pre-merge because they voted out Justine. And for Jesse to use that relationship, get the idol, and then blindside him. And then the way his move, obviously, at Final Six with eliminating Cody, having the killer instinct, which I've said, Austin didn't have the killer instinct. We saw that bite him in the ass, and that's why he fell all the way to like 16 for me, I think. Mm-hmm. Yep. And then to do this at the same time while flushing Carlos idol, it can't be said enough, just the creativity and strategic level of his game, well, not really being that big of a threat until all the way, until basically he made that move. And then all he needs to do is win fire making or win final immunity, which is like, what, he's got like a close to a 40% chance of getting to the final three and then winning $1 million. If you're giving yourself a 40% chance at $1 million, you're doing something right. So I think he it's okay to put him above winners and be like, yes, I think Jesse is a better player than winners.
I agree. I
think Jesse's a better player than Erica, Marianne, and Gabler, because I think he has a better chance of winning on any given season with the way he is.
Yeah. And a lot of times, like, if I'm ranking players, I'll put some winners behind non-winners, but generally like a winner will always be close to the top player from their season. I think Jesse being considered a better player than Gabler is just like not even really a question at this point. Like, Gabler played a great game. He played as well as he could, right. But Jesse played such a phenomenal game of Survivor that it's just like, man, nobody, this is where Gabler was such a pain in the ass to everybody. They didn't realize how good Gabler was at fire. And so Gabler going out and setting the record, Jesse never had a chance. There's St. Cliffo. I have Jesse at number one. Never had a chance at beating Gabler. But when you put yourself in a position in the new era where you have to make a big move because you're not going to beat somebody at Final Tribal, and you can get to Final Four with a chance to either win, like you said, win immunity or go to fire and have a chance to sit at Final Three, and you're guaranteed to win in that situation, like Jesse was, you can't really say he played it. He couldn't have played it any better than he did. So anyway. All right, that means we are at our top two. And at number two, we have Jam Jam. So Jam Jam for me came in at number four. For you, he came in at number two, which is exactly where he ended up on this list. I think Jam Jam is a phenomenal player. And I'm not going to knock him for the Tika three, but I kind of just felt like with Marianne and Dee and Jesse, I was a little bit more impressed with what they had to do to get to where they got. Jam Jam, though, I don't know if anybody's ever been better at managing their threat level than Jam Jam, because that is a man who should be seen as a massive threat every time he walks into a room.
That's why I have him at two. He's so impressive. Like, because he is like loud, boisterous personality, and he's so charming and likable, yet no one was looking at him as a threat to win the game. Then he goes to Final Tribal Council and explains, like, basically how he was bouncing back and forth with the Tika three and led that alliance. And it was like, oh, well, this guy just ran circles around us. So yeah, I mean, that's all. I mean, Jam Jam is a phenomenal, phenomenal player and a great winner.
Yeah, exactly. And I think when you look at why I had him at four and not at two, and why I put Marion ahead. His Tika 3 alliance, like Carolyn was kind of in his pocket, although Carolyn did have some moments where she was like ready to maybe turn on Jam Jam. 44 for me was just a little bit less difficult of a season to navigate. Maybe that's just because Jam Jam was so good, but I don't know. I just felt like really, I don't want to talk negatively about Jam Jam because I have him at number four, but I just felt the other three people played better games than him. But if you were to tell me that Jam Jam was number one on a list of best players of the new era, I wouldn't even question it. I would just be like, okay. Yeah.
A lot of this stuff. I mean, this top five or top six, I think is like pretty interchangeable as we've kind of been saying.
Except for we both had D at number one. We did.
There you go.
And I do think that D, as we move further and further away from the new era, and obviously we have to see what happens with 47 and 48, 49. I think D played one of the most dominant games in the history of the show. It really is dominant from start to finish. She has her finger on the pulse with everybody. She's good physically. She's good strategically. She's amazing socially. She gets Keturah to tell her things that never should happen. At Final Five, D should go home, but her social game was so good that they don't even realize it. She only wins in a 5-3, but I don't knock people for a slight win. Same reason why I have Brian Heidick so high in my like top 100 ranking. He beats Clay 4-3 and people are like, oh, Clay stinks, but he got the votes he needed. D played it as well as she needed to get the win. And like, I just think it's such a dominant game. It's the poster for what you should do when you come and play in the new era.
Here's a counter argument from a very nice guy. D is a good player, but she's far too loyal to be number one. If Keturah had voted with Jake, D is gone at Final Five. She really lucked out with a pretty unforced error. I think we would both argue that her game is so good that she had that relationship with Keturah to have Keturah do something against Keturah's own best interest and share that information. That's how good a relationship D had with her. And that's a credit to D's game and not a detriment.
100% agree with everything you just said. 100%. When Keturah walked over to her, everybody in the world was going, what the hell is happening? How is she doing this? This makes no sense. But that's how good D was. D had that type of tight bond with every... She had Austin. She had Julie. She had Keturah. Sure, she didn't have Drew at that level, but she didn't need him at that level. And she had him close enough that he wasn't willing to turn on her earlier in the game. D plays an absolutely perfect game of Survivor. So she ends up here as our number one. And I think she is the ultimate lock to play Survivor again. And we get back to Jack Wolf. He said, do you think we'll ever see another two-time winner? I think D, Kenzie, and I really think any of these winners could win again, but I think D, Kenzie, and Jam Jam would be my top three picks for that because their upsides are just so high. Like Marianne and Erica and Gabler, they could go early. People could say, okay, Gabler, we're not going to let you do what you did the last time and get to the end. But D and Jam Jam especially, I feel like they're the types of players who could win any season they play, whether it's returning players or new players.
Mm-hmm. We have Demon here saying D is great in all three categories. Outwit, outplay, outlast.
Do you think that's D?
Could be Demer.
Yeah.
I'll break the record. I'll be a broken record one more time just to finish it off for D for number one. Out of everyone who's ever played, who's going to win the most seasons if they play like 1,000 times? D is winning the most seasons. Like that,
you really think so?
That's why I have her number one. I think she's like, she's not that threatening, but also super social, super charming, super strategic, ruthless, like not telling Austin things when Austin is sharing the world. Mm-hmm. I mean, being able to make relationships with everybody, having a really strong alliance and then working outside of your alliance, like having that strong of a connection with Keturah. I think she's got like, just, she's like a, made in a factory to be a Survivor player. Just the chops all the way around.
So. I agree. I totally, totally agree. I'm glad we were in agreement on that one. I wasn't sure if we were both going to have her at number one, but I think that's really fun. There you go. Will, do you have your rank in front of you if we just rolled really quick through like 25 to 1 so people could hear our personal rankings?
Yes, I do.
All right. So I'll do mine real quick. I'm just going to say 25, James, then Carla, Julie, Q, Deshaun, Cody, Maria, Emily, Jonathan, Mike Turner, Carolyn, Shan, Cassidy, Erica, Austin, Carson, Omer, Ricard, Charlie, Kenzie, Gabler, Jam Jam, Jesse, Marianne, D. That's my 25.
Okay, I have Owen, Cassidy, Jake, James, Drew, Julie, Mike, Evie, or Evie, forget. Emily, Austin, Carson, Ricard, Tiffany, Kelly, Shan, Gabler, Carla, Charlie, Omer, Marianne, Erica, Jesse, Kenzie, Jam Jam, D.
Perfect. There you go. And that's our ranking. So thank you everybody for listening. Consider becoming a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist. August is right around the corner. That means a whole new month of content. We'll be finishing up All Stars during that for Every Season Matters, which is our top tier patron series that we do. Then we'll be getting into Vanuatu. Also, we're doing Survivor Rock Draw, which, as we said, the idea for this podcast came from Survivor Rock Draw. Will and I do Q&As. Blake and I are doing a casting episode every other week. And we have one coming out tomorrow about the fact that Survivor casting is already open and what that might mean for you. That's for our second tier patrons. And we have like a movie podcast that comes out as well. I'm doing Australian Survivor, which is a lot of fun. So there's plenty of content over there. It's pretty much an episode almost every day it's every day except the weekends. You're getting at least one episode on Patreon if you're our top tier patrons. Plus you get access to our Discord, which is a good time. So thank you all so much. Please like the video. Please subscribe to the channel, and we will see you soon with another episode. Don't quite know what it's going to be, but also check out Blake and McKenna's Big Brother coverage, which they've started and actually is getting pretty awesome. Pretty solid numbers for a season one. I'm not disappointed in the two of them. So good. Check that out if you're into Big Brother, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.